To support our work at the Izzy and Murtada Picture Show and the work of other independent creators like us, sign up to listen to the podcast on Nebula.
Nebula is the creator-owned streaming platform that hosts great videos and podcasts like the one you're listening to now. Sign up today at nebula.tv/picture show and you will get access to this podcast plus other great podcasts and videos.
Sign up for Nebula and help support independent media creators. That's nebula.tv/picture show. Hi, everyone. This is Izzy doing a special solo episode. This week, I spoke with Sydney Urbanek, one of our best pop culture writers. She writes her newsletter, Mononym Mythology, which is all about pop stars and, in her words, their visual antics. If you don't know Sydney's writing, I highly recommend you check it out. But I talked to her about Renaissance, Beyonce, Taylor Swift, the Eras Tour, and this seemingly new venture a lot of pop stars are getting into with putting their concert films in theaters, in traditional movie theaters. So we talked a lot about that and how their personas basically are being elaborated on in these films. If you're like me, you saw Renaissance, maybe you saw the Eras Tour, and I'm hoping that you can get a lot out of this and kind of how these films are playing out for the rest of us. So yeah, it's a great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. And yeah, subscribe for more. Definitely leave us a rating on the Apple Store if you can, or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps people find us. So thanks so much and enjoy the interview.
Sydney, thank you for joining me. I'm so excited to talk to you about this.
Yes, likewise.
Well, I want to start with your background a little bit, because I feel like you come into the world of film criticism from such a specific and interesting angle. So I was wondering if you could let people know, if they're not familiar with your writing, kind of where you come from, the kinds of things that you're interested in, and I guess what makes you the perfect person to talk to about the Beyonce and Taylor concert films?
Oh God. What a big question, but I'll try and answer this like succinctly and whatever. And you can like whip me into shape if I'm getting a little too carried away. To make this short and sweet-ish, I was a film undergrad student, and I've always been like a huge movie person. I was always like the movie person in every elementary school class friend group growing up, but I was also the movie person that was like obsessed with Britney Spears, like In the Zone, and like Lady Gaga in middle school, and then Beyonce in my undergrad. And I was that person in all my film classes in undergrad where we'd be talking about like representation or like star studies or something, and I'd always find a way to make what I was talking about, what we were learning about Beyonce or like some artist that I was interested in. I was like, oh well, you know, like Lady Gaga loves Hitchcock too, and everyone in my class would like roll their eyes. And initially I got a lot of like snickering even from professors and stuff, which is funny because I would later go on to do my master's, where and I'll come back to that in a sec, but I would learn from people that were still in my like undergrad film department. They've started, like since I left, they've started teaching Lemonade, and they've started teaching all these things that I was begging my professors and my classmates to acknowledge while I was still a student. So anyway, yeah, I finished my undergrad, and then for a couple of years, I was trying to like find my way into the online criticism world where I really wanted to be talking about movies, but I found I was always trying to write about like pop music and its relationship with movies. So I was very interested in people like Madonna, where I wanted to talk about how Express Yourself was like a big Metropolis homage. And I was always finding a way to make movies about like the pop stars that I loved and the really like cinematic work that they were always making. And then that kind of evolved into like really being really interested in these artists that see themselves as auteur, like pop stars who have production companies that they start and who direct stuff and who seem to really want to be taken seriously by like real cinephiles and like the filmmaking establishment, if you will. So eventually I applied to do like a one-year master's program, again in cinema studies, but where my whole shtick going in was like, I want to talk about the really blurry line between movies and music videos. And I want to talk about Lemonade and A Hard Day's Night and the road from like A Hard Day's Night to something like Lemonade. This is also a few years ago at this point. And so I got a master's in cinema studies, but where I was the one that was always writing about like Drake and MIA and Parkwood Entertainment. And in the end, I wasn't able to do this big visual album history thesis that I had thought I was going to do. I'm actually like working on that now separately. That's a little fun fact. But what I ended up doing was specializing in Jonas Åkerlund, the director of like Telephone and Paparazzi and Hold Up. And I largely wrote my thesis about his work with like Beyonce, Lady Gaga, and Madonna, because they are sort of my own personal like holy trinity, if you will. And a lot of that was about his collaborations with them and how like surveillance was a big part of that stuff. Like if you picture, you know, in God Control, there's like a mass shooting at a nightclub, but every so often we get like surveillance camera footage, or like Beyonce like whacking this CCTV camera with a baseball bat, stuff like that. That was like a theme that seemed to be a big deal in his work and his work with them. So that's what I ended up doing at the time. And then by the end of that program, I'd launched my newsletter where I kind of just wanted to like think through and write about all the things I've been talking about and more. So very interested in like this sort of upper echelon of pop stars, and how they get into like myth making through their visual outputs, because that's been like a real thing ever since, you know, Elvis Presley and the Beatles and eventually Prince and David Bowie, and all of these people are kind of in my like mental umbrella. So yeah, I feel like that was longer than I was hoping to answer that question. No, but hopefully it makes sense.
No, it makes sense. And I think that's a really good transition to kind of talk about this moment that we're specifically in, which is like pop stars have using film as a method of their own myth making. We have two huge concert films that sort of came out like basically at the same time, Renaissance and Eras, and they're both kind of serving different functions like within those artists. What's discography? Is that, or filmography, both?
It's kind of like, again, like this is what really interests me, is that the line is very blurry. But I mean, in what is a good word for it? I mean, in Beyonce's case, it's like it's the latest installment in this growing filmography that's like a lot bigger than people ever really like. Even I've been reading so much about the film as things have been coming out, and people recognize that Beyonce has made like a few movies before, but it's always it's way more movies than people like are kind of accounting for, because people always think of her starting to be a real like visual troublemaker in like 2013 when she dropped her self-titled album. But that came like 5 years into her having like a production company that she was starting to create stuff
and with. That's Parkwood,
or is Parkwood, that different? Yeah, okay. It's Parkwood. So initially it was Parkwood Pictures. And that was a way for her to like produce Obsessed and Cadillac Records and movies that she was starring in and have like a bit more control. I would argue that that came out of some of the control that she did not have on like Dreamgirls, for instance, where in the case of like that whole like best original song story, she kind of got booted out of the writing. There was some temporary rule where like there couldn't be more than four writers on a best original song submission. Oh, and so she was booted out of the four or something like that. For a listen. Yeah.
Wow.
And I think like that was one of the many things that happened around this same period where she started separately taking a bigger role in like co-directing music videos that she was in, and then kind of like breaking away a little bit from her dad. And then she was also like 26, 27. So she's like kind of just at a, you know, a formative stage in one's life. And then in 2011, she files this trademark for Parkwood Entertainment. And that's now these days like the main company / production hub / music label that she operates out of. Like everything Beyoncé does comes out of Parkwood. And even when something like ostensibly doesn't come out of Parkwood, like for example, she stars in like a Tiffany ad, she brings like the director with her. Like it's her team that puts all of the content together, if you will. And like what it means is there's this kind of like, there's this very cohesive, consistent branding style that everything Beyoncé is like associated with is touched by. But yeah, you're gonna have to like rein me in here because I'm just
well, and then so I guess also maybe this is useful for listeners. It's like to also know that a lot of my questions are being guided by not being very fluent in either Beyoncé or Taylor Swift for different reasons.
Yeah,
because like I would say Lady Gaga has been my number one gal, followed closely by Madonna. But then like I've always been kind of on the periphery of Beyoncé, really enjoying her music, but not engaging too much with the persona or the fandom. And then Taylor Swift.
Third exists. Category.
Yeah. And then, yeah. So I guess like I didn't see Eras, but I did see Renaissance. And that was interesting for me because that was my first film of hers that I've seen. And of I'm Beyonce's. Curious. Yes.
So you didn't see Eras, you didn't see the tour, or you didn't see the film?
Either.
Okay.
I've been told they're the same thing. There's no additional concert.
I didn't
concert
go to the
footage.
Show. Okay. I didn't go to the show, but the Eras film is like a 3-hour professionally shot, she took one of her tour stops and like filmed it, and like that's what the movie is. There's nothing more, nothing less, although she left out a few songs and now she can like sell the same film again to people by putting these three new songs in when it goes to VOD. It's very much just like, here is the show. If you miss the show, here is the show. So I saw it in theaters and I found it very fun. You Good. Do feel that it's 3 hours long. And I actually came away from it. So like you, I've always been a little more kind of what's the right word here? My relationship to Taylor Swift is like maybe more complex than it is to Beyoncé. But I love so much of Taylor's music. I listen to it all the time. Like when I look at my, you know, this is the time of year for like year-end wrap-up stuff when you're title is letting me know who my top artists were. Like there's a lot of Taylor Swift in there. Like I am listening to the music, and more recently I'm trying to get more into like writing about the visual stuff because it's such an interesting pocket. But what's really interesting about like these two movies and the fact that we've been talking about these two movies all fall is that they're like not analogous at all.
Right.
Like they're not, I get why they're being like spoken about in tandem. And like, I've been complicit in that and like speaking about them in tandem. And like, I was interviewed on Canadian national news about how they were both coming into theaters and what that meant. And yeah, but the truth is like, they're not trying to be the same kind of film. So it's we've kind of done both artists a disservice in talking about them like they're similar in terms of like ambition or scope or
so
depth.
in terms of, so my understanding is that this Renaissance is similar to some of the other concert capturing type films that Beyoncé has done in the past.
There's definitely similarities. So if so you haven't seen Homecoming?
No, I haven't. I'm ignorant.
You've got to watch that.
I know. I'm really ignorant. Homecoming. But also, so, but like, I guess,
like, yes and no.
Before you start on that, because I guess I'm trying to understand, like, between the two of them, whether they feel like they're both continuing something that is, like, in line with what they have been doing, or if they're kind of aberrations from, like, their normal output.
So in Taylor's case, she has put out concert films before, where it's kind of like, I did a show and we filmed it. And she's done at least three or four of them at this point, and they vary in terms of like having a directorial stamp come through. They're all made by different people. Like Jonas Åkerlund did one with her in 20 whatever the 1989 one was. I don't know if it came out in like 2015 or 16. He did that one, and then several years ago she did like a Reputation concert film where, again, it was just like, I did a show and we filmed it and we edited all these different, all the different coverage together. And that film is like a lot of, again, because I enjoy that album and I enjoy the music, like the film is a lot of fun. I sometimes say this thing that I realize like sounds, I'm aware of how pretentious and annoying it sounds, but I think there's like concert films and there are filmed concerts, and Taylor is a churner out of like the filmed concert, and that's fine. Like they're a lot of fun. But again, like when you go to see Stop Making Sense, which I did earlier in the fall, like that's a concert film that was like, it was filmed, it was thought of as a film long before it was filmed, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So to come back to like what I was actually asked, like it is very similar to other concert films that Taylor has put out in the past, filmed concerts / concert films, whatever. We don't have to like get into that. But what is different about Eras is the size. So size is part of it. And then so is just like the narrative of the tour itself, and the fact that it's coming on the heels of like, it's coming after her most serious like public Reputation hit that she'd ever taken. And it's kind of like a triumphant being on the other side of that, look how many thousand people came to see me moment.
Wait, so to clarify, what was the big hit? Was it like the labels conflict, or was there something
else? Well, I was thinking of like the whole 2016 fiasco.
Okay.
That was actually more like fiascos plural, but
right.
She's kind of rewritten that a tiny bit as being about like something that it wasn't necessarily. I don't know, that's, I feel like that's for a different, in short, like the 1989 era was a period where Taylor was like massively overexposed. And that meant that just about like everything she did was a hot topic. And there were a lot of like sort of mini crises that had piled up. And then she won Album of the Year, and it's a great album, but like she won Album of the Year. That was a few more crises like just embedded right there. And then it was kind of like all through the first half of 2016, you started to see people being very frustrated with, and some of it was like just textbook misogyny, like just people being really frustrated with how well this like very visible woman is doing. But then the like Kim Kanye telephone thing happened.
Right.
I can't believe I just said telephone, but that was more of like a nail in the coffin than it was like the whole impetus for the whole thing. Like that for a lot of people was like, okay, like let's use this as our nail in the coffin reason to finally like get this woman to shut up. And she did. Like she spent the next year being like more or less silent, and then came back with Reputation. And so when I say that like Eras is this kind of triumphant, like on the other side of this moment. That was never like as big of a hit to her. Like, she said in this new like time story, she's like, my career ended. And like, that's not true. She's allowed to like think that. And she's, I recognize that that would have been like mentally like a very difficult period, but like the Reputation tour was, I think, like the most successful North American tour ever. And it was an all stadium tour. Like, you don't go on a stadium tour if you're canceled, right? Yeah. Like, that's not how that works. Nevertheless, by now, she's definitely like on the other side of whatever that was in terms of just like fan power and money and power. And she didn't get to tour her last big pop album prior to Midnights, which was Lover, because of COVID.
Right.
So yeah, that was a long-winded way of answering, is this a new kind of film for Taylor Swift? No, not really. But it's hitting in like a flexier moment than even the Reputation film did.
And it's sort of, is it also true, like, is within her fandom, is there kind of an extra layer of hype there because of everything that's been going on with her label and kind of this reclamation of power that the Eras Tour kind of represents?
Yeah, so it's funny, I didn't even like touch on that, the whole master recording thing, but that's another like layer to it, which is the Eras Tour is this huge flex of like not only career longevity, but the fact that she's the main author behind all of this music. And one of the things I couldn't stop thinking about while seeing the movie in theaters was like, damn, like the music really does speak for itself. Like, the hits are all there. It's just like banger after banger. Like, she has that. That is not something that can be taken away from her any way except legally. And even then, like, very soon, because she's so close to this re-recording project being over, like, that won't matter. The whole like recording, master recording thing, like, won't matter. So another aspect of it, to answer your question, is like, it's this big, like, I am the author of my art and I own my art. Like, every day I own more of my art than I did the day before. And also, like, listen to it. If, you know, not to sound a little like abstract, but like, here it is. Like, don't you remember hearing this in 2008 and like dancing to this at your middle school dance? And then don't you remember this soundtracking your first like blackout drunk night in college? And it's like, yes, I do, actually. Like, this is a huge, it's sort of similar to, like, conceptually speaking, it's kind of like what Homecoming was for Beyonce, where it's like, look at all of the hits and like, look how many years they span.
Have you ever heard of anything like this from another artist? I mean, obviously there are so many like battles with, you know, record labels and things like that, but I mean, sort of an artist who's at the height of her power, essentially doing like revisiting her career in a very literal way like this, where it's sort of like, yes, we're basically like relitigating 1989, or like, you know, going over these eras again, like very much like, not, you know, I'm performing a couple of the big ones at, you know, whatever concert, it's, you literally need to buy the album again, and we're spending a few months with this, you know. I've never heard of anything like this.
I don't think there is really like an equivalent project. There have been other artists that have struggled with like ownership of their work, of course. And then what's funny is like every big pop concert tour is kind of like an Eras tour without being called that. Like, at every tour, you can go to like, you know, Beyonce's Formation World Tour. You can go to Madonna's Celebration. Sorry, not Celebration. You can go to her Confessions Tour, and like, you're going to hear all of like the big hits. But Yeah, no, I don't think there is like an equivalent. What's really interesting about the Eras tour is that she's like been around a long time, Taylor, but she's pretty young. Like it's an earlier than it could be moment for her to be like, let's celebrate my entire career so far. But of course, it has so much to do with like the whole Scooter Braun stuff and like the loss
by necessity versus.
Yeah, it's very smart. Ultimately, like when you consider how much money has been made and like it's a real nostalgia is a huge factor for like fans that are in the room. It's very interesting to compare the whole project to like the Celebration tour that Madonna is currently on, where she's like, you know, a 65-year-old pop star with like years and years and years and albums of the same kind of thing. And there were some funny tweets I saw when the Celebration tour was announced, being like, okay, here's an Eras tour like that actually feels a little more hard won, if you want to call it that. But I do think that the Eras project from like a business artistic perspective is very, very smart. But you know, to come back to Renaissance, it builds on this existing body of work that Beyonce has made, produced, slash directed, depending on the film. And stylistically, it's very much like in keeping with previous things she's done. What's different about Renaissance compared to even her last big concert film, which was Homecoming, is that it's sort of like encapsulates the whole tour as opposed to just like two nights of a performance. And then it's way more, I haven't been able to like watch Renaissance yet with a pause button where I can like see where I am in the movie, but
right.
Homecoming was very like, I want to say 70-30 in terms of concert and doc. Renaissance feels much more, it feels much more like 50-50. I don't know if it is, but it feels like there's been a real attempt to like catch people up on some of the doc. This is how Beyonce speaks to the public, is through documentaries. So there's a lot, and there's been a lot of years since her last one. So that's part of what's happening here, is like she's squeezing a bunch of important like info into these doc segments. So it feels way more 50-50. And then every Beyonce film that comes out seems to have listened to whatever like the criticism of the previous one was a little bit. So like you will notice that Beyonce has largely like stopped talking about money in her films. That's one example. Homecoming was very heavily criticized, and I think rightly so, for all of the like diet culture stuff. And
interesting.
That's largely missing from this film. It comes through more. I mean, at the end, my friend Rogan, who's like very smart and a fellow fan, she always says that like a lot of Beyonce's philosophies can be explained by the fact that she's like a pageant queen. She's like an adult.
Yeah, that makes sense.
She's a former pageant kid. So she, as you saw in the film, like when she sings Flaws and All, she's like, I'm a host of imperfections, and she's like jiggling her arm
and it's
like,
but it's also kind of like
tapping
where?
Her chin. I know,
where are the flaws?
Yeah.
She's like, I'm 40, and I'm like, yeah, and you go to con on the weekend.
yeah to give
love
her kids a more normal,
yeah,
as she put it, to give her kids like a chance to be really normal, like me too, girl, like I get it.
Same.
So yeah, it's a really interesting, I feel like I need to see Renaissance like 8 more times to say anything coherent about it, but I'm going to do my best.
Well, I think, coming from just someone who's like a lay person in a lot of like pop stars' lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that Renaissance did for me that I was really interested in was, obviously, it's a documentary and it gives a behind the scenes of the machinations of putting a tour together. And it seems very focused on that and very focused on specifically painting Beyonce as like the creative director. She is making most of the decisions. She's on the ground saying, we need this camera, we need this angle, we need this light. So it's like a very technical portrait of her, mm-hmm. which I thought was really fascinating. Because I was just thinking about it in terms of the fact that we don't hear from her very often. And so that privacy and the way that she's sort of quartered away from interviews and all of these things can kind of obscure how involved she is in that process. At least for people who aren't, you know, seeing all of the films. And I'm wondering, like, if her other films do a similar job in kind of, I guess, very clearly pointing to her as this like person who is in charge making all of the decisions, or if that's kind of like a new iteration of her as a like persona and creative figure.
So the short answer is that it's one of the most like consistent themes in anything she's ever put out. She is all of like the Parkwood documentaries, but even the documentaries that she'd put out before the company kind of came about are like, they double as like how the sausage gets made type stuff, which she used to do initially. And she still sometimes does this, but just like with less frequency, is she used to like make a project, like she'd make an album, she'd make a concert film, and then she would separate the making of component. And that would be available as like a short film on a DVD. So you could watch like the I Am World Tour concert film, which does, by the way, have like little doc moments here and there, but then you could separately watch her putting the tour together. And that's where you would get all of the like craft stuff and the Beyonce nearly falling asleep while standing shots and like all of the like work is my life. She used to say stuff a lot in documentaries like, I'm like a machine. I don't use the bathroom when I'm working. I forget that other people need to use the bathroom, but I'm the boss. I have to like maintain. I set the tone for the rest of my team and for the room. And then more recent doc stuff is her kind of reckoning. It's really interesting, like across the years, because she's kind of like reckoning with how hard she works and has worked, and like the toll that has taken on her physically and psychologically. And then she always at the end of every film is like, I'll never work this hard again. And then you fast forward to the next one and she's like still working that hard, but still she's the narrative of her documentaries is very like a woman struggling with her relationship to work and her workaholism, but clearly like benefiting so much from it that I think it would be very hard to be. She's a recovering workaholic, but I'm not sure actually how badly she wants to recover.
Well, it seems like she's more aware. It seems like with Renaissance, she's kind of making an explicit call to herself to relax a little bit.
Yeah.
Although I don't know that. I mean, who knows?
It's true. And it came off like way more strongly in this film than in the previous ones. But she does really say that like every project. She's like, I'll never do this again. And then it's like, here we go.
Here
like
we
it's
are.
Just this cycle. But that's what it's like to be a very like defined by your work kind of person. But in more recent films, what she does instead of separating the two pieces is combine them. So you get like a full length show experience, but then you get removed from that world a little bit. Like periodically throughout the film, she kind of like, I'm picturing the like Roller Coaster Tycoon hook, like she picks you up and she drops you in the like backstage documentary genre, and then you keep jumping back and forth. But yeah, it's a very, very interesting, like she's always been that candid and forthcoming. Well, I don't know if candid and forthcoming are the right words here, but she's always been interested in like making people see how much work goes in behind the scenes, and also that she's the one like in command of all of it. But it right. used to be that like you only really saw that stuff if you were a fan who had B bought a DVD and who C cared enough to like go through the special features on the DVD and watch all the featurette stuff. But nowadays, I think especially starting with Homecoming, because it was on Netflix and so many more people saw it than they could have. So many more people saw it than may have been the case if she'd put it on like some obscure streamer, or if she'd aired it on TV like she's done in previous stuff. A lot more people kind of like clocked in to see it is because of like how accessible the project had been made. And like that's true also of this one, because it's gone to theaters, which is the most like second only to Netflix, perhaps. It's the most she's ever seemed like she actually wants you to see the film, because she seemed very content for years to just like, if you want to see my magnum opus, you can get a Tidal account, or you can tune into HBO at like this time of night and know it will not play a second time, like figure it out. She had a phase where she was very much like on that wavelength, and in recent years seems more eager for people to actually see what she's been working on. And I realize that sounds weird, because she's one of the like most visible, successful people in the business, but
she has that air about her that there's like a sheen of privacy. I mean, even if even in these projects that are kind of the peek behind the curtain, they are crumbs that feel like feasts, if that makes sense. Like we're really not getting that much, but it is so delicious that you're kind of like, that's fine.
Well, it's like, it's that age old business principle. It's like one of the most basic business principles in the book, which is like scarcity creates demand. And she's very happy to just like shut up and let people talk for her and guess every which way, like what she could be doing in any moment, what she could be thinking. She benefits like professionally from that kind of just like holding back and letting people do their own thing. But then she keeps fans sated every so often with like a quote unquote like peek behind the curtain, where you're not really learning anything ever that she doesn't want you to know, but where it's been like very carefully. I mean, Beyonce's the director, like she's telling you, as with like any pop documentary released in recent years, like every bit of information has been strategically selected and narrativized. And there's stuff that's missing. Like there's lots of stuff that's missing from any of these films, not just her own, but like, I mean, anything. Gaga 5'2", or, you know, Selena Gomez, My Mind and Me. Like that's what these films are like, they are PR cleanup opportunities. They're like myth making exercises. And Beyonce and Taylor Swift are two of the like best people in the game at the storytelling component.
Yeah. Cause I feel like Taylor kind of works in the opposite vein, in the sense that like her songs develop a lore that the more involved you are in her fandom, the more you can read into them or understand what they're saying in between the lines, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like you have homework to do if you're going to understand an album. In my case, like I'm actually not, that turns me off. I still like a lot of the music, but I just like, I'm not interested in reading all the Wikipedia pages yet. Maybe that'll change. But and they also like, they're inverse artists. Like they sell different things, those two women. Like one is trying to be your like relatable big sister who would high five you in the hallway. Yeah. And the other is like not looking to be, one is more like aspirational. She's not looking to be relatable at all. Like, it's like this could be you, but you're going to have to sacrifice like your whole life and have a business, have your family like behind you as members of your team. And you're going to have to work like 18 hours a day and, you know, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
They sell different things.
Well, I'm curious how you think each of the two of them see themselves within the history of pop culture. Like, I feel like Renaissance very specifically is drawing on Diana Ross, or she's like, or Grace Jones, you know, she's kind of putting herself in this lineage of women And then, but like, yeah, so I feel like she kind of sees herself in that sense, but where do you think Taylor places herself? How does that kind of play out?
I feel like a Swiftie would be like way better at answering this question. When I think about, like, when I talk about them kind of selling inverse things, and I have to be careful the way I word this, but like when you're, I feel like the Renaissance Project is much more interested in the idea of like uplifting like a collective of some kind, like, as you said, like placing herself in a lineage, not just of like huge entertainers, but a lot, like mostly Black entertainers. That's like a really important point. And kind of like the project standing for something that is more than her, like more than Beyoncé. She's very much like the vessel. She's like conducting all the energy in the room. With like Taylor,
the invention of house was kind of part of that too.
Yeah. And like, yeah, there's this big family component. And like, that's a bit of information when I talk about like strategic reveals, like that is a bit of information that has been sat on for a long time, because as a very close attention paying fan, I don't remember ever hearing about Uncle Johnny until like 2016. And she includes that speech in the film, of her giving that speech, talking about feeling like Khaleesi, and she's got the hat on. So there's this big, like, very layered, ambitious project happening. And then with Taylor, like, it's also layered, it's also ambitious. At the end of the day, you're kind of in the room to celebrate, like, Taylor Swift and perhaps like being a Swiftie and being part of like the Taylor Swift loving community. And it's not to say that she's never done any like advocacy or anything, like that's not accurate. Although this month, it's sort of funny to talk about as an issue. But I think they just like, they're selling, she's selling Taylor Swift. It's not that Beyoncé is not also selling Beyoncé. Like, she absolutely is. But I think Beyoncé does more, she puts more effort into, like, at least having you walk away thinking that, like, it stands for something greater than just her. At the end of the day, they're both, like, billionaires raking in lots of money from their projects. They go about what they do in very differently branded ways. Did that make sense?
No, that totally makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, it's hard with Taylor too, because I feel like the crossover from country to pop was made, I think, a big deal out of in her career and kind of how she's been perceived. But I think she pretty much made pop country music before. I mean, it didn't feel like too huge of a sound leap until later, but maybe that's, I don't know if that like plays into part of it too.
I feel like nobody, I don't know. I don't know if like, let me try the thought. Let me try and put the thought together out loud. I don't think anyone has thought of Taylor Swift as like a country star since like at least 2014.
Right.
When she made 1989. Yeah. But it's a narrative thread that she has always, it makes sense, but she's always continued to like run with it. Like she I think brought it up recently when like re-releasing that album, but you know, in her own PR cleanup movie, which was Miss Americana, which she didn't direct, but she produced. And like, trust me, that's like we should not be assuming there was no authorship on that film. She talks pretty at length about like the Dixie Chicks and Shut Up and Sing, which was like a Barbara Kopple documentary, and tries to kind of put her own life and art in conversation with them. But I get why she would still think about being a country star. Like, the context for her bringing it up is that she uses it as an example of like why she always was mum on political stuff. But I think it's like very
easy. Is that because like the country audience is more fickle about politics? Is that the implication?
Yeah, they lean conservative, the community, but then there was also like the whole Dixie Chicks Bush incident, which effectively like ended that iteration of their career. But I think Taylor Swift thinks about being like a former country artist way more than anyone else. So I sometimes like when it came up in Miss Americana, I thought it was interesting, but like kind of just more than anything, like a smart bit of like branding. She's really good at like, and so is Beyonce, yeah, by the way, like really good at saying something in a documentary, knowing that fans will repeat it and defend them using it, however true it may be.
Yeah.
But that's what these artists do. Like that's what they do. Like that's what they're meant to be experts at. And I don't even, when people like boil criticism of these movies down to just like, this is so contrived, I'm like, obviously, like that's their job. Like nobody in 2010 was watching Lady Gaga walking around being like, I wish she would just show up in a t-shirt and jeans and like talk to us about songwriting. Like no one ever has said that or thought
right.
that.
Yeah. Well, I guess like I'm kind of interested in Stan Brain, I guess, because at the time of recording, we have witnessed a few, I guess, incidents of Stan's, I mean, this is nothing new, but not taking criticisms well of these artists, whether or not they're valid criticisms, you know? But I'm thinking about them as filmmakers and thinking about like, there's such a difference between, let's say, like people who are obsessed with Todd Haynes or David Fincher or anything like that. Like, there's no kind of equivalent of like a rabid fan behavior. Maybe Zack Snyder is like the only one.
I was
one,
about
but
to
it's,
say, yeah.
But like, what is it about pop music specifically, and you, that kind of makes people behave in this way? Because it seems so prevalent within fan communities of pop stars specifically.
I feel like one of the big things is like they court that. Like these artists, they need. In order to fill a stadium, you have to have like, you know, in quotes, manipulated that many people to pay to see you in a stadium. And some people can do that on pure like musicianship and like really good for them. But you don't get people like passing out at your shows because you like can do a nice minor chord. Do you know what I mean? I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. So I think the big difference is there's that, and then there's the fact that like the music industry is competitive in terms of numbers in a way that the film industry is for like opening weekend at the box office and then like isn't ever again.
Right.
I feel like stands are very, it's like you have a bunch of teenagers sometimes in a room like talking like they're corporate execs where they're like comparing numbers and they're doing like projections and looking at figures. I don't know. It's a really good question. It's really interesting actually to think about them in like alongside some of these more textbook auteurs. I as I said earlier, like I've been reading everything that gets published about Renaissance because I'm just so eager to like see what other people thought and kind of make sense of my own thoughts. What's one like consistent in them? Consistent thing in them rather is that you don't get a lot of people getting into the actual filmmaking. Like you do, they do in kind of like a superficial, like let's just like quickly mention it and get out of it kind of way. But you get a lot of people, a lot of the Renaissance writing coming out right now is very like, what does Beyonce mean in this moment? And not a lot of like, this is a film directed by Beyonce. Let's talk about the actual filmmaking. Like technically and the formal stuff, I was saying to my friend, so, okay, here's a thought experiment. If there were a new like Christopher Nolan movie that came out and you opened a think piece and it said, I think this Nolan guy like is really interested in time as a concept. Time seems very interesting to him. And also something I noticed is that he like messed with the narrative chronology. He has moments of this movie like out of order. You'd be like, right? Go on. Like say more, like obviously, but with Beyonce, and you know, pop stars in general who make movies, like with Beyonce, you can get away with being like, this movie is very much about Black capitalism, and like this movie is very much about her relationship to work. And it's like, yeah, like those are the two big, like say more, like tell me about the angles, tell me about the lighting, tell me about, there's nothing, you'd have to see, people don't really get into the filmmaking that much in writing about Beyonce, because in order to do that, you'd have to like see her as a filmmaker, like a real filmmaker, and people don't do that.
Right. I'm trying to think of, I mean, Stop Making Sense is probably the last time, or like Moon Age Daydream maybe, but like
that people got into the formal,
like,
stuff,
the formality of filmmaking of a concert.
It's yeah, I mean, it's also so interesting because in the streaming era, we only seldom get these kind of like water cooler monoculture moments, because if something went like direct to Amazon Prime, I'm not gonna, like, you know, I always say like my dentist hasn't seen that movie. I can't talk to them about it. For example, like one of the greatest concert films of the last couple of years was Kendrick Lamar's Big Steppers tour. It's his like Live from Paris show. And that was directed by him and his usual co-director. And you can tell on like watching that film that it was conceived of as a film from the like rehearsal stage of preparing the show. And that's the other thing that makes Beyonce's concert films very fascinating, is like, she is already making a movie when she's in rehearsals. Everything she is doing is like leading up to the eventual concert film that she's making. And in Homecoming, like there's this, you've probably seen the quote on social media and stuff. There's this part where she's basically like, until I see some of my notes applied, it doesn't make sense for me to make more. That comes in this segment where she's talking about how like things aren't translating to camera. And she's sitting beside her frequent co-director, Ed Burke, because she is in rehearsals for her Coachella show, already thinking about the concert film that she's making that would eventually go to Netflix. Like that is, when you're watching a Beyonce concert film, suddenly there's like a bird's eye view shot where she's looking up at the camera. Like she is not thinking about the people in the room. She is thinking about you at your local AMC watching Renaissance, a film by Beyonce. She does stuff on stage that's not meant for the in-person crowd. That's like Beyonce adding to her like filmography.
Yeah. I mean, that was one thing that impressed me a lot about Renaissance. Specifically when she was like, yeah, we've been working on this for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I mean, that probably means that you wrote this album 5 years ago.
Yeah. And that's another reason why I'm like, these projects are not analogous in that's another.
Yeah. So good, it's sort of like,
they're not the same.
I mean, for, that's just crazy that like Beyonce invented contemporary, like pinnacle of pop culture, like 5 years ago, and is probably working on like 2027 now.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's just really wild. The amount of like foresight and kind of like a cohesion of thought that requires is really, really impressive.
It is. And there's also like a restraint element. And I was like tweeting about this when I came out of the film. Like she has had to sit on, you know, if I were working on the Renaissance World Tour, I would be very excited about like, I'd be tweeting out every floor plan and like stage mock-up and, you know, live music arrangement. But Beyonce doesn't do any of that. And a really great example of that. I personally still, even now, think like Lemonade is her magnum opus, just like as a film, as an album. And she started working on that in May of 2014, like the recording of the album in May of 2014, exactly around the same time as like the elevator incident happened. That movie didn't come out for 2 years. So there's a year, I assume, a year and a bit of like the music, and then there's another year of putting the film together, and all the while, like, nobody knows what she's working on. That is like so fascinating to me, and I wish that I could have like an ounce even of that kind of restraint and just like not, you know, tweeting all my thoughts out and making it so that like there's less interest in whatever I'm writing.
But I think, I mean, what's amazing is that like clearly she has that with respect to like the business of like release schedules and things like that. But she also seems to be able to apply that to her art. Like there are several times within the documentary where she's like, well, we need to simplify. We need to scale it back. You know, we need to make it very clear. And I love that. I think the best example of that is that the closing song is literally just like the album cover. It's not the biggest frills performance in the show. It's literally just her on the horse. That is the iconography that she's essentially nailing it down, getting it right. And just literalizing, like, it's a disco house album. We're doing a disco ball. Like, that's kind of it. And I think like that's so genius to just let that have its moment and make it a big one.
Yeah. And like people always talk about, like, with these big pop stars, they talk about Easter eggs and stuff and like leaving clues. I think there have been examples of Beyonce like leaving clues or the odd Easter egg. But I think what a lot of people take as Easter eggs, like, are they like, oh my God, I didn't realize that like 3 years ago she used this word in a cover story, or like she posted a picture of herself on a horse. They assume it's an Easter egg, when I think what's potentially more likely is like the project is just very like thought through, fleshed out down to the tiniest detail, and like what you are witnessing is like cluing into that, if that makes sense. Like I don't know if that distinction is even like a useful one, but Beyonce, it wasn't necessarily like, I'm trying to think of like a real example, because she was talking way before we knew Renaissance was like coming out. She was talking about, she was using words in cover stories like kiki, and like words that were very like for the knowing, in the know reader. And later, like as she releases a house album, people are like, oh my God, like it was an Easter egg. And that is one way of looking at it. And another is like, actually, she's just spent, like, as you said, like 5 years immersed in language and among people that, like, it's all part of this very, like, cohesive world building. And that may have been less, like, artificial a moment than it comes off. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think it makes total sense. I mean, I feel like I feel like I have the most micro example of that is like when I'm studying for a video or something, and then like I'll encounter some film that I'm like, I'm going to use this meme for the next 3 weeks. And like, nobody knows why I'm suddenly using this meme, but it's only because I've just been working on this one thing, you know, for like,
absolutely. Yeah. And like, it's funny. I probably do the same thing, but I always am like, oh, she's working on something about like Cloris Leachman or whoever it happens to be. I'm like, something's coming. I'm excited to retroactively like find out why all the memes. But yeah, I think that's a really like big element here, is that it's like a film. Yes, it's like capturing this year's concert tour Renaissance, but it's also like she was making a documentary years ago. Like, this was always coming. And then every moment she's on stage, she's making a concert film. She is like a very visual thinker that way. I also feel like I'm being like too generous. Like, I do have criticisms of this film.
Well, this is what I was going to say, because I think on the one hand, like, it is really impressive to be like, yeah, I thought of this 5 years ago and now you're all catching up with me. But at the same time, I think it also makes you less responsive. And that's kind of a criticism that I think has come up with her before, is like, it is her art form. It is not like trying to say like, well, this is, it feels like it was almost an accident. Like, this is what we need right now is Renaissance. And it's like, well, you made this like far before the pandemic. So like, what is this actually for? Do you know what I mean?
It's like, a really interesting point. Yeah. Yeah. And there have been like, this is not the first Beyoncé project whose release context has made the project awkward somehow. Like, this is not, a lot of people are like, I keep seeing stans, Beehive people being like, oh my God, this is like her messiest rollout ever. I'm like, you guys, there is always something, because she's been working on something for, you know, months to years. There's always something. And like, when at the top of 2020, when the pandemic obviously happened, she had an entire cut of Black is King, like the eventual Disney Plus visual album. And there was a whole new cut made. And then after that second cut was made, we got like the George Floyd protests and this big, you know, summer of like reckoning, as it's often called. And like, that had to be like last minute accounted for. And she had to find a way to spin the project as being important for like, this is the correct moment for this project. But even though, as you say, like, it wasn't made necessarily with a moment in mind. There's always something though, and I'm trying to think of like a good other example, but there's like always, she has this weird curse of like things in the news that concern her happening like right before she goes on tour, or like right after she releases an album. And like, I am sort of like talking out of my ass here, but there's always like some legend that dies whenever she goes on tour. And so there's always I don't want to say wedged in, because it comes off quite like quite seamless in the show, but like there's always some tribute that has to be like wiggled into the show. And so this time around it was Tina Turner, and then previous tours it's been Prince, or it's been, you know, and there's always some like tribute segment. She has a bit of a like a curse that way, in terms of just, you can only prepare so much if you're thinking like 5 years ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, I am going to make you watch Lemonade, by the way.
No, I know. I think I realized watching Renaissance, like how huge of a mistake I have been making in not participating, I guess.
But I am curious, like, to hear more about like your experience of the movie as someone that, you know, if we're talking about like feeling like you need to do homework to understand something, if you felt like it stood alone as a project, or if you had kind of questions about, because you sort of, when we were texting the other day, you were like, I don't know how much was supposed to be like new information and how much was supposed to be understood already. I'm really curious to hear about that.
Yeah. I mean, I never felt like I was lost watching it. So I did feel like it stood alone in that sense. But like I said, I think I was just kind of, since I don't know a lot of the details, I know the basic stuff about her family. Like, I know who her mom is. I know that she's involved in the project and all that kind of stuff, but I didn't know who Uncle Johnny was. Clearly not many people did, or no one did. So like, that was someone where I was just like, oh, is this someone everybody knows about? Because for example, when they show a lot of the crowd scenes, they show a lot of people carrying signs that say like, Uncle Johnny made my dress. And so I'm like, are they carrying that because they know who he is already, or because like, it's just a good lyric? And it seems like it was so just a good lyric, right? Like, and then it just happens to be this thread that they actually pick up on in the documentary. So it was stuff like that, where it was kind of like parsing through and kind of learning retroactively, but I never felt while I was watching it that I was lost or like unable to understand how it fit like
in the project,
what she's trying to tell. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, pop star film projects always do this, where they assume some kind of like prior knowledge, prior context that you have going in. And that's an interesting one, because if you like have followed the album since dropped, like he was made part of the, like he was in like the dedication, and people realized that for the last several years that she has been like, she and also Solange, and I don't know if her mom had already been posting about it, but she has at least since 2016, when she won that fashion award, fashion icon award, been like thinking about a house album, making a house album where like she could tie it back somehow to Uncle Johnny. And that's another reason why I'm like, her restraint is wild, because she was waiting. She seems to like have ideas that she's had for, you know, 30 years, but she waits for the correct moment to start trying to like piece the narrative threads together. And there's stuff where like, if all of her albums, you line them up, there is a story in there about kind of like, as I said earlier, like her relationship to work, but almost more importantly, like the pursuit of happiness and like personal fulfillment as achieved through like romantic fulfillment, and the kind of like struggles to heal certain wounds in her romantic relationship, and how they got over that. But all of which to say, like, you can't make Renaissance an album about like finally being on the other side, as she says in Church Girl, without having these albums come first. Like, she's waited for the moment where she feels like the release catharsis is actually like appropriate narratively, like however many albums away that needed to be. So there is this like interesting arc that she's been building where, I mean, I think her albums all stand on their own, but they're very fascinating read as this like longer 25 year story about like wanting Jay-Z to be in love with her and stay in love with her. And then,
yeah, but I feel like that was interesting that
she can create new threads.
That was interesting to me too, because I was like, there is almost no Jay-Z in that movie. And I was like, yeah, it made me a little, I was like, that's fascinating.
So when I say that like Beyonce's projects seem to respond to like past criticisms, or not respond to, but like account for, she's reading, she's aware of like, people are always like, leave that man at home. Every time she goes out.
Well, or, like, yeah, I was happy. Project, I was like, I don't care about Jay-Z. And so I was, mm-hmm. I was like, thank God.
And it seems like that was, and that's just another example of like, she is paying attention to people being like, leave, you know, lady, leave your man at home. If you want to put it that way, like leave him at home. And she was like, okay, I will this time. Like, I will. So the next project around, we'll have to see what think pieces she read this time, because there's always some little shift she makes. Like she is a pretty good artist at like listening to critique and trying to like move forward accordingly. And then on the other hand, she has some things where she's just like stubborn about, like, she's like, this is staying, like, I am never not going to be like a capitalist with my whole chest. Like, that is staying. And that's why I'm like, when people use that as their biggest takeaway from the new Beyonce project, I'm like, okay, but like, say something interesting.
Yeah.
Like, we know.
Well, if you had to guess, we know. I mean, if you had to guess based on everything that you've read so far about Renaissance, granted, like, only seen it once, but kind of getting a sense of how people are responding to it, what would you guess that her edit would be for the next one?
That's a hard question. I mean, truthfully, I think I need to like spend more time with the film. There is like a whole 70% of the film that I feel like a lot of writing is ignoring or just like not accounting for. Like I keep going into the film looking for like a real discussion of what we see in the frames of the film, and not just like what Beyonce the entertainer means in the fall of 2023. So I don't know.
I was hoping for more dialogue about her wardrobe. That wasn't really talked about.
Yeah. For example, There's just, I feel like I saw a movie. I feel like I saw a different movie sometimes reading some of these reviews, just because of how much, again, like the critiques are fair, but just in terms of how much space is like given over to one thing versus the other, if that makes sense, if that's fair.
Yeah, I wonder.
And I hope I'm like coming off thoughtful, because
I think
it's been
sense.
A very messy behind the scenes thing for like fans of both women for weeks. Yeah.
I think it makes sense. And I wonder if there's kind of a discomfort with a lot of film critics critiquing like the actual mechanics of what's happening versus the cultural implications of what's happening, because the mechanics of stagecraft specifically are so different than from what you are trained to look at in like filmmaking. If that makes sense. So it's like,
it
so
does,
sort of like, like if you're in this part of the stage, is that effective? Like if you shoot it this way, you know, I feel like that's so different than the typical way that we think about like mise en scène, you know, or like when a costume is meant to fit into like a fashion wardrobe, as opposed to like, oh, well, this jacket fits this character really well because XYZ. Like, I just think, I wonder if like the logic of the criticism has to change, if that makes sense.
I think that's a really interesting point. One thing that I read that I thought was very good at actually getting into the like filmmaking, as well as the like cultural myth, was Richard Brody's Eras Tour film review.
Oh my god, yeah.
So because
I did really like that article. Sometimes he makes
I
a banger.
It.
It's true.
I loved it. And like, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but just for people listening, like his argument kind of boiled down to what a spectacular show and woman, and what a like just okay concert film. And I was like, exactly. Like, I sat there in the theater and I mouthed words along, and I drank some drink called like an elderflower Collins. I'm just going into detail here, and like I enjoyed myself, but like, did I come out of it thinking this was like stop making sense? No.
Right.
Will I put the Eras movie on and do work for a couple hours with it in the background? Absolutely. I do that with a Reputation film all the time.
I was going to say, I left Renaissance being like, I would show this to my parents. You know what I mean? Like, that's a good holiday movie,
watch,
kind of.
Yeah, I make my family watch every Beyonce movie. Like, I think they're just, I really want to see it a second time in theaters. And I think everyone's just waiting to be asked to go with me. My sister is already gone, so she's like, okay, I'm checking that off. And she like fled. She went to Florida. She's like, I'm not seeing that shit again.
Oh, I saw it again. I saw it twice.
I need to go back. And so both of my parents are like, oh my God, oh my God. And my husband, because of the puppy, like he's gotten out of it. So he's like, I'm staying here with the dog. He knows he's going to have to watch it when it's available at home. So that's why.
Yeah. Well, I also can't imagine feeling burdened by like being taken to see this film. Like, that's what's so funny.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that. And because I had four tickets to see it, and then we were trying to fill the fourth slot, and there were a few people that were like, no, that's all right. Like, it's 3 hours. I'm not interested in seeing it for 3 hours. I'm like, okay, well, your loss.
Wow, I guess you hate good music. I'm so sorry.
I guess you hate fashion and
wow, I guess you hate
art.
Women.
I guess you do.
Wow, a woman filmmaker. Cool.
Yeah, way to be. Yeah, exactly.
Well, on that note, I've kept you for an hour and a half now, so I feel like I will
That's
let you
okay.
Go. Be with your puppy.
I will.
Well, let the people know where they can find you and your writing.
Oh, so the big place, especially going forward, is going to be my newsletter, which is called Mononym Mythology, because I love to make things difficult for people. And I'm at, so my handles everywhere are Sid Urbanek, and If you go to, say, my Twitter, you're going to get links to everything else, including my tongue twister of a newsletter, Monin and Mythology. And I've got lots of thoughts forthcoming on all of these things we've been talking about. So hopefully this has not just like wasted all of them. And I have more to say.
I think you'll always have more to say.
Thank you for saying
astounding.
That.
Well, thank you so much. And go follow her. Follow the show at I Am Picture Show. And yeah, more next week.